Welcome to the Contracting Officer Podcast. It's not just for contracting officers. If you work anywhere in the government acquisition world, this podcast is for you. Whether you work for government or industry, we're here to help you understand a little more about how the other side thinks. This episode is brought to you by Skyway Acquisition. You don't know what you don't know in the government market. Skyway's team of former contracting officers helps that by giving you context on your contracts. To be more prepared, more competitive, and more effective in the government market, go to SkywayMember.com. Today we're talking about contract modifications. Let's get started. It's a rare contract that doesn't have some kind of change during its period of performance.
I'm really not sure I've ever had a contract that I didn't have to modify at some point. Maybe like a purchase order or something really small, but for the most part, there's always some kind of mod, whether it was a meaningful one, like a change to the spec or some changes to the schedule and then any kind of negotiate change to the price, or there's admin ones I had to deal with, like just a name change in the core, the contracting officer representative, or like updating a funding mod or a wage determination, that kind of stuff.
I don't think industry would think that a wage determination change is an admin change. Maybe it is, but it can create havoc on that side. But yeah, administrative mods are, there's probably more administrative mods than the meaningful ones like you just were talking about. Sometimes it's as simple as changing the payment instructions.
Yeah, or updating wide area workflow, that kind of stuff.
Or updating clauses, which is an evil we can talk about later.
Yeah, and the mod can be an effective tool. It can feel like a necessary evil. And honestly, counterintuitively, it's something that I don't think we plan for much. You know, it's so common that contract modifications is a long way to say it. And we just call them mods.
Yeah.
Because they're so frequent and they got their own FAR part 43.
And that's what we're here to talk about. Before we do, let's say thanks.
Yeah, I'll say thanks to Jennifer Schoss. She's been a huge supporter of us on LinkedIn, and she shares our content pretty regularly. I really appreciate her help. So thanks for that.
All right, moving into FAR Part 43. FAR Part 43-103 describes the two basic types of modifications, and they are bilateral and unilateral. So that's what, one and two. A bilateral mod, it's sometimes referred to as a supplemental agreement, that's a mod that's signed by the contractor, by the industry side, and by the contracting officer.
And the idea here is to make, it's a negotiated agreement between two parties, right? And so you're definitizing some kind of agreement, you're reflecting basically a modification to the terms of the contract that affect both sides that you agree on.
Right. And unilateral, that's more for those administrative mods that don't affect the schedule or the specification so much. Or, I mean, we'll talk about change orders later. But unilateral mods are things that the contractor doesn't necessarily have to agree to. The government has the power just to do this. And like I said, that's admin changes, change orders, which result in negotiations later usually, changes that are authorized already that by signing the original contract, industry has agreed that you government can unilaterally change this, like exercise an option or stopping work temporarily or issuing termination notices is a unilateral right of the government per that clause that's in every government contract that you sign, because it'd be really awkward if both parties had to agree to terminate a contract for default. I don't think you'd get many industry players to sign that mod.
Yeah, I'm not signing that one. That's pretty much how that would play out.
So FAR 43 describes how to prepare and process contract mods for all types of contracts. I mean, construction, architect, engineer, those things are spelled out on there as well. But it doesn't apply to things like delivery orders under indefinite delivery contracts. So the government has the right to issue a delivery order or a task order to do some work. That's not a modification. That's a delivery order, a task order.
Yeah, and the idea is you're not changing the contract. You already agreed to this.
Right.
So the idea is that we all agree you're going to flip this switch, okay? That's not a mod. So it's important to understand that the difference, because once you agreed to the government being able to flip this switch, when the switch gets flipped, you can't say, oh, well, I didn't know I wasn't going to
– You can't flip that.
Exactly, yeah. That's why there's an ordering clause, but that's a whole different conversation.
Important tidbit here. We've talked about this before. We had a whole episode about unauthorized commitments. FAR Part 43, 102A spells out that only the CO acting within their authority is empowered to execute contract modifications. Other government personnel shall not act in a manner as to cause the contractor to believe they have the authority to bind the government, or direct or encourage the contractor to perform work that should be the subject of a modification. And there's a whole separate episode about unauthorized commitments, but only the CO has the power to change a contract. Lots of times, the program manager or some of the program personnel on the government side want the contractor to do something different. If they tell the contractor to do something a little bit different than the contract says, and the contractor actually does it, then we might have a problem.
And it's actually really easy for that to happen. An example would be we had a software development contract, and the contractor was on contract to get this done by, I think it was like the 1st of February, right? And there was an event, there was a meeting with a couple of uppity-ups in the agency, and they said, hey, can you get this done by the 15th, like 2 weeks early? Just a conversation in a meeting. I wasn't in the meeting, right? And the contractor says, oh, so sure. Well, of course, that requires like 8 hours of overtime from somebody. And sure enough, here comes the cost bill, and there's 8 hours of overtime. And poof, just like that, it's an authorized commitment. Was it intended to help the government to speed up the overall process? Yes. But an email would have fixed that. And this is, I'm not saying that the CO is trying to get in the way. It's like, this is the stuff that creates work.
And that's on a super small scale. You know, the change caused 8 hours of extra work, right?
Yeah, I just.
That's something just, absorbable. But the change could be something so big, like in a large development program, the government could ask the contractor to change something in the design of the product that ripples through the whole thing and causes massive changes to the schedule and the cost.
I've got stories for that too.
But. Yeah. So eight hours is the nicest unauthorized commitment I've ever heard of.
That's right. That was easy to fix.
Okay, one more thing I want to read while we're still in the FAR time section here. 43-102B, and I'm actually going to read this word for word. It's important, Kevin.
Okay, I'll let you read this one.
Contract modifications, including changes that could be issued unilaterally, shall be priced before their execution if this can be done without adversely affecting the interest of the government. If a significant cost increase could result from the contract modification and time does not permit negotiation of a price, at least a ceiling price shall be negotiated unless impractical. And done. Close book on reading there.
Close scene.
So this is huge.
This is right out of the FAR. And what it basically says is, yes, you have to have all the documentation. Everything has to be perfect. And yes, you have to negotiate every little nuance of the contract before anything happens, unless it could adversely impact the interest of the government. In other words, unless you really need to get it done.
Right.
And so, it doesn't specify who approves the definition of important here or impractical. So I would say the CO has the authority to just move out.
Right. This is a judgment call. And for big deals, the CO might not want to do this alone. You probably want some top cover if you're the contracting officer and it's a big change. But what this paragraph says, and I don't think that it's used enough, if there is an important contract modification that needs to happen to bring new capability to the government as soon as possible, you don't have time to complete the whole new spec and write an RFP and wait for the contractor to develop a proposal and negotiate it and then get it on contract. I mean, that could be months, could be a year in some massive change, you know, in the case of a really big deal. So what that means, if you wait till the end, the contractor doesn't even start doing what you actually want them to do until you sign that mod. And if what you want them to do actually contradicts something that they're already on contract to do, they're going to keep working on the contract as it's written now, which may be counterproductive, right? And you're still paying for stuff you don't want. So FAR 43-102B gives the CO the power to say, get to work now. Here's the change. Here's what the change is going to be. We're going to negotiate this later. So get to work and then give us a proposal for what it's going to be and we'll get it negotiated. But in the meantime, industry's making progress delivering what the government actually wants now, which could be different than what they thought they wanted before. And the biggest out is the last sentence where it says, at least a ceiling price shall be negotiated unless impractical. So yeah, of course, if you have time, you want the contractor to say, this change is going to cost you no more than $1 million. I'm positive, and I'll sign a binding document that says, here's the ceiling for this change. And then you negotiate it, and it's going to be under $1 million. But you don't even have to do that if it's important enough, and that's not practical. And that's why this paragraph is huge.
Yeah, and what's, let me zoom out for a second. Now, this is contract modification. Now, it sounds like we're doing a letter contract. Well, that's a different. That's when you're setting up the contract from zero. Like, you didn't have an agreement. And what you're talking about is you have an agreement. You know that instead of the train going from here to Newark, it actually needs to go from here to New York City. The longer you wait to tell the contractor, stop going to Newark and go to New York City, is bad, right? That's what the purpose of this clause is. It's interesting to me because I would have used this clause as a basis for an authorization to proceed, for an ATP, to say, okay, do this, and let's follow up the details later. And I think people had this instinct of, oh, I need to get everything documented. And I was one of those people. I was very leery.
I think we're taught that as contracting officers. Yeah.
So those of you for those listeners who are lawyers, I'd love to have them kind of opine on this.
Right, and I'm not saying get all nutty with it. Don't just start telling people to do this, and then we'll negotiate it all later, because that can lead to a mess as well. But this is a flexibility that's in there that I don't believe is used often enough, at least in my experience. So one more thing before we leave FAR time. We talked a little bit about unauthorized commitments. How do you prevent unauthorized commitments from happening? So 43103A is where it says, hey, if the contractor thinks that somebody in the government has told them to change something in the contract and it didn't come from the contracting officer, it came from somebody else in the government, the contractor is required to notify the government in writing and say, hey, I think there's a change here, so that the government can come back and say, oh yeah, you're right, that is a change, go ahead and do it and give me a proposal for it. They can say, you're right, that's a change, don't do it after all. Or the government can say, yeah, that's not really a change, you're supposed to do that and it's within scope.
And those three items are actually listed in the FAR.
Yeah, but in fancier words than I just said, I think.
Yeah, you thank you for not reading.
Last thing to remember about mods, while we're in the technical part here, is that a contracting officer can't execute a contract modification that costs the government more money unless they have certified funds first. So funds have to be available. We've talked about funding in many episodes. Colors of Money is just one of those episodes. It makes sense that a contracting officer can't sign a brand new contract unless they have certified funds in hand. They also can't sign a modification.
Yes, this is an example of the economic decider has to be included in this conversation.
Right.
Because
the economic decider has some power here.
Yeah. That this, you know, great example of it being a team sport is like, I literally couldn't do anything until I got a Form 9, which was certified money. It's like, I have this money, I can't. And so that, for the funding folks listening, that's one of the things that could slow down mods. Is like, did you ever like lean ahead knowing that the money would probably show up and you'd start negotiating and you'd ask for the proposal and you start working your way through it. And then you get to the end, you're like, okay, I have everything except money.
All right, let's lock this into, when does this occur in the time zones? This is not acquisition time zones we're talking about. We're talking about modifications during performance of the contract. So that's in the execution time zones and mainly in the performance zone, the second time zone. But maybe, just maybe, if you're in the honeymoon zone, if you're at the very beginning of the process right after award, you may already be talking about potential changes. You may already, if, for instance, this is one of my real life examples, if the source selection took a long time, contract is finally awarded, government now realizes that they already need to change something. So at the kickoff meeting, they say, we know it was awarded on this, we want to do something a little different, and not something big enough to like mess up the whole basis of the competition, but they're telling you before you even start, we want to do this different. We're going to need a proposal for how much it's going to cost to do it a little bit different.
Yeah. And we had one similar where the funding was cut by about 30% between source selection and award.
Oops.
And so, yeah, so we sat down at the kickoff meeting up in Michigan and went through, okay, we're out. I think it was like, I don't know, $300,000.
You should be 30% less happy than you think you are, contractor.
Yeah. So we had to, it's like, what are we going to cut? You know, so we had to cut out some, we extended some schedules and moved some stuff around. But yeah, that's when this shows up, is that all of a sudden.
I can see all the balloons at the wind party kind of fizzling.
Only a third of them.
So why is this so important?
Well, there's an axiom that the only constant is the law of change. So we kind of expect that changes are going to happen in contracts. And depending on contract length, I think you have more opportunity to have more changes. So like, for example, in a five-year contract, you have things like technology changing, the schedule changes, the resources that are available on both sides may change. The need, the actual requirement may change. And then there's random stuff like we had a camera break on a tracking system. And then all of a sudden in the middle of this contract, we have to modify to do something that's within scope, but was never intended.
Yep. So, there could be a big storm that wipes out the site where you're going to install something. So you want to install it somewhere else. I mean, 5 years is a long time, but it happens on short contracts too, right? In a purchase order that is scheduled to deliver something in 3 months, the government could decide they want more or less or something a little different just in that little bit of time.
Yeah, or faster or slower. On the F-16 program, when I was at Wright-Patterson, I worked on a mod for 4 months. And there are ones that go longer. I think you've got stories of ones.
four months. That's nothing.
But it's funny that there are ones that SOCOM I did longer and shorter. But the idea is that depending on where you are, that might seem like a lot. And that might seem like, oh, that's nothing for us. So, yeah, it's relative. But changes are going to happen. And I think that negotiating a change is something that we should all expect, but I'm not sure that we're planning for it. And what I mean by that is not all of the players are planning for it. I mean, the contracting officer, once you've gone through this a few times, you go, of course, we're going to have mods. But make sure you educate your customer on that. Like the finance folks and the program manager and the user, all of them understand that, like, mods don't just happen. And both sides have approval processes. I mean, there is a certain level, like, you know, for example, when I was at Special Operations Command, I could sign a mod on my own, I think, if memory serves, up to like $1 million. Like, didn't have to have a lawyer look at it, right? Different agencies have different numbers for that.
Yeah, and industry side may have more approvals than the government does, depending on what it is, because this is a change to their plans. So there could be sign-offs all the way up to the CEO, depending on the size of the company and the size of the change. So it don't expect that these can always just be flip that switch and the negotiation is complete.
Yeah, and the idea, the example would be, I got everything approved through our side, so I ask you for this proposal, and what do you mean you can't just sign this contract? And so I didn't see that as clearly as I do now that I'm on this side. So that's a good foot stomper, what you just said about the idea of the industry, even if it's only $500,000, if it's a small business and it represents 10% of their revenue, the CEO is going to want to see that. Well, the CEO is busy, so it's going to take longer to get stuff done.
Yeah, 10% could be a lot. Let's get specific on the government side. Why does the government care about mods?
Well, depending on where you work and the nature of the contracts that you have, if you have large billion-dollar contracts, or if you have task orders and delivery orders off of multiple award contracts, or if you even have purchase orders, all of those get modified. Some more than others, but the idea this is always going to be there.
No one is immune from modifications.
There you go. And the more your counterpart understands your process, and you understand theirs for that matter, the more effective these mods can be. And so from my perspective, there are times I handled it well. I was on a large system, and I had a good understanding of what the process was for my counterpart on the contractor side. So I could really tell this mod is going to take us 2 months. Because my process takes this long and his process takes that long, and we can work them both.
Yeah, once we think we've negotiated it, then we have to get stuff reviewed. Yep,
yeah.
I get it.
And then other times I struggled with this, and earlier in my career when I didn't realize that some of these, even something as small as, I say this small, $300,000 addition to the contract, on a large contract, it's still their process was that was a big enough number that people above my counterpart had to see it. And they would come to the meetings and they wanted to negotiate with me. It was all crazy. And so understand that process or you're going to lose so much time.
Yeah, I want to say a little known fact. Maybe it's not little known, but contracting officers on the government side generally have a lot more authority dollar-wise to affect changes than their counterparts on the contractor side do. On the contractor side, authorities can be surprisingly low in some cases.
Yeah, and what's interesting is sometimes I would lump some of these changes together into one mod, thinking that I was going to get like four or five things done at once. Well, that increased the value of the mod, which then increased the complexity on the other side. So there's
and,
a nuance.
And the approval levels, right? You just took something simple that could have gotten done between you and your counterpart. Now it's got to be reviewed by everybody that works in the entire company.
Yeah, and I got a great story for this one. The example would be that we were adding one person to the contract because we increased the services on some IT support. At the same time, we were adjusting how they were going to be managing the cybersecurity on another part of the contract. Those are two very different things, but you put them in the same mod and all of a sudden it's like, well, wait a minute, this easy thing's not getting done because this hard thing over here that it's attached to it, it's in the same mod. So there's an art to this. You have to be intentional about, do you want to break all these mods up into smaller pieces and get them done? Or do you want to lump them together and be more efficient?
Yeah, sometimes lumping together works in everyone's favor because if separately they might be difficult to negotiate because the government and the contractor aren't seeing eye to eye about the value of a change. But if you have three or four changes and you're negotiating the total price for all those changes at once, maybe it works in your favor and the government's opinion on one is opposite of the contractor's opinion on that one, but also they're on opposite sides of another one, and it all washes out, and you come to one happy deal on the total price for all the changes. So sometimes combining things could be good, but it does make it more complex. What money's for what? What is being changed where? How do we document this?
I didn't think about the money. You got different acronyms. Whole other topic. But yeah, the point here is that this is an art and science. This is why, you know, contract management is it requires communication. And you raise a good point that you could distribute that risk. Well, you can't do that via email. You got to actually communicate with each other.
There's more than one way to close a deal, but you may not know it if you're not talking back and forth and learning what the other side really needs. Okay, let's talk about this from the industry side.
When I was a contracting officer, I did not know that the contractor's process was probably more painful than mine. In some cases, it still appears that way.
No, it's true. Especially large government contractors have as much bureaucracy or more than the government. And for some parts, they're required to have that bureaucracy by the government.
Yeah, it's ironic.
Yeah. For me, industry should care about modifications because that you should understand that the government may view modifications as part of some evil get well plan. And what I mean by that, you've heard of buy-in. Whenever there's a competition, the government's always worried that a contractor is going to buy in. They're going to bid an artificially low price in order to win and then count on contract modifications to fix all the holes and deficiencies in their plan so that they can actually make money on it. And contractors can count on that, especially if they think that there's some holes in the government's requirements that they're not going to bring up during the competition. They're just going to leave them there because they know later on they can negotiate with a little more power because they're already on contract. So the reason that the government may view it that way and the reason that the government may be paranoid about that is because it happens. It happens all the time, but it doesn't have to. Negotiations still matter, right? You're on contract. Both parties have to agree to a change. But who really has the power? Like I said, pre-award, probably the government has the power because they haven't awarded it yet. But what about post-award?
It's a combination. Put on my government hat. I've picked the person that I want to work with. I've picked the winner, right? The interesting thing is after award, both sides have more power than they think to get stuff done.
Yeah, I think post-award, maybe it's balanced. Pre-award, definitely the government has more power. Post-award, the contractor may have more power, but they don't have the ultimate power in negotiations.
Yeah, the contractor has more power than they did. You're right. They had more power than they did during the pre-award, but both sides are trying to get stuff done. I mean, think about it. From the perspective of what's the purpose of a contract, they're both trying to move things forward. And yeah, they have power by the fact that you have to work with them because you picked them, right?
Well, but really, unless – don't think that the contractor – it has a right to that work, right? The government can always say, I've had enough of you, and terminate and start over and award to somebody else.
So, but yeah, the point here is that there's a balance of power, there's a balance of authority, there's a balance of responsibility to move the contract forward. And a mod is a big part of how that happens.
Yep. Okay, last thing before we move off of the industry side here. Profit on these changes, profit on modifications. Some government COs, and I may have been guilty of this when I was on the government side, some government COs want to negotiate lower profit on changes because it's considered to be no risk or less risky than before. Oh, yeah, it's just you're already doing this. You know what you're doing now. FAR actually gives you an out on both sides to get around lengthy profit negotiations if it's the right thing to do. I'm not just saying go to sleep and follow the FAR. But FAR 15404B6, so yes, this is in part 15, it says that if the work of the modification is directing is of the same type and mix as the current scope and relatively small dollars compared to the basic contract, the contracting officer can use that basic contract fee percentage as their negotiation objective. So pretty much assume that if the change or modification is just doing more of the same that you were doing before, you don't even have to negotiate fee. Just stick with what's already been negotiated.
And if somebody asks you why you did that, you use 15404B6.
Right. But don't automatically do that. If it's something different, you can negotiate fee on either side.
Yeah. But this is one of those small adjustments that can make things a whole lot easier. They can move contracts faster.
Okay, let's wrap this up before we get too deep.
So my big takeaway is that contract management is about managing the contract. In other words, you can actively engage and communicate and organize what you're trying to get done, right? Contracts are not fire and forget. Very few of them are. I mean, I've had purchase orders I thought were fire and forget until things didn't work. So out of the gate, I think we have to, as a profession of contracts managers or people who touch contracts, understand that the changes are going to happen. And what ties these together is this concept of negotiation. Is it contract management is its own discipline because you have to understand how the negotiation process works in the context of the contracts that you have. And so a whole other negotiation is a whole other topic, but it is happening all the time throughout the entire performance time zone.
Okay, I'll wrap up by circling back to something that I brought up before. From the industry side, don't count on changes or contract modifications to get well, to make money. If you buy in and bid too low, counting on changes, and those changes don't materialize because the government doesn't have funding or doesn't want to do what you think they want, well, you may fail. You may not be able to deliver the contract. You may not be able to hire people at those super low rates that you propose to win. And that could have long-lasting impacts on your chances of winning future government work through CPARs, which we've talked about in a separate episode, through past performance evaluations and source selections, which I think that's also part of another episode.
It is.
Don't want to get too wrapped up in our former episodes. Point is, don't count on changes. From the government side, if you're working a very complex change that's going to be a complex modification of the contract, treat it like a new acquisition. You need clear documentation of the requirements, what's changing, which means updated statements of work, potentially new deliverables, updates to the schedule if there's a master schedule for the program. Think about it like this is fresh. You're going to need to document the changes to all those little pieces of the contract. It's not just about hours or materials. And last thing for the government, don't always be suspicious of industry. It's not all one big get well plan. It's not. And the way to get around that suspicion is communicate. Make sure that both sides are talking to each other and communicating, not just throwing information back and forth, but actually communicating with context. And it'll make every future contract change flow more easily. I think we've said that probably in every podcast that we've ever recorded. Communicate, 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 right?
And a great example of that is during pre-award, contracting officer is leery of open communication. Yes, he should have it. Yes, during the acquisition time zones, there's all kinds of rules about who can communicate. Post-award, it's kind of the opposite. It's like you should be picking up the phone first. You should be, I mean, you have the latitude to communicate so much more openly and freely post-award. So, I mean, honestly, I would go so far as to say there isn't an excuse to not communicate post-award because there's no risk. Whereas pre-award, you could easily screw it up and cause protests, et cetera. But that's all gone now.
Yep.
The execution time zones, you should be talking all the time. Why not? And the contracts that I did that better were better contracts.
And I think that's a great final point. I'll talk to you later, Kevin.
See you, Paul.
Okay, that's it for this episode of the Contracting Officer Podcast. Thanks again to our sponsor, Skyway Acquisition. And remember, send your questions, comments, complaints, and topic ideas to me at paul@contractingofficerpodcast.com. Thanks for joining us.